This is Michael Grecar. Today's date is Saturday, March 10th. The time is 5 p.m. I will be interviewing Mr. Harold Jarkey of Sterling Heights. And today we're going to be talking about the Winona Beach Recreational Park during the time of Mr. Jarkey's career there as a nightclub entertainer.
I guess he's got to be like 78 years old, Roy Gardner.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if you remember that name or not.
You know, remember old Mr. Watson?
Yes.
He used to run the Jackrabbit there.
Yeah.
And the lady that owns the Bayview Bar, what's her
Duchesne?
Name? Duchesne. Well, it was
after that.
Gladys Gass.
Yeah, Gass.
Gladys
yeah.
Gass.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her in a month of Sundays. And I finally, of course, my grandmother DeLong used to rent bathing suits out at Winona Beach
my
when
goodness.
She was a little girl.
Yeah.
Well, not a little girl. My Uncle Dude used to collect fares. In 1920, when people went in there.
Yeah, that was before my time, I hate to say.
So I've been interested in the beach. I've seen pictures of buildings out there that, of course, my time starts at about 1955.
Yeah.
And from 55 until the beach closed, I know basically
about,
the
I guess you could figure maybe around 13 years in there, see, because the beach closed around 1968, I think. Right.
In tracing you down, your telephone number down in Sterling Heights there, I talked to Mrs. Margaret Baker from Essexville, and then I talked with a Mrs. Hatchell, who referred me to Joe
Mrs. Hatchell is in the real estate business.
Right.
Yeah.
And she said, too, that Mrs. Eichhorn here in Bay City had a lot of pictures of Winona Beach.
Yeah.
It was real old.
Have you checked with the Bay City Times?
No, we haven't.
Well, you should check with them. A fellow and his wife that are there now, that writes some columns for the Bay City Times. The gentleman that just retired lives out at, not the Killarney, it's another beach further out. Donahue Beach in that area out there. I think I can't think of his name right now. He was at the Bay City Times for a long time. He just retired.
Ray Kuhn?
Kuhn, yeah. Ray Kuhn. He'd have a lot of things
there.
Check with on that.
But we can. I remember the casino there, Joe and I've seen pictures of the beach. You know, none of the buildings there were even familiar. They had the old Russian spirals on it.
Yeah, that was before when I first came out the beach. Way back, I guess 38, somewhere around it, 35, 36, that area. They had the skating rink was up, which was at the time was used also as a ballroom.
The one right along the water.
Yes, facing the water. That was where the beach house was before. Then they converted it.
Was that the beach house
yes.
at one time?
Yeah, in that area. Well, the beach house was by there, part of that. They converted that into the beach house when one of the big ice floes came up. I don't know if that's before your time tonight. The wind was coming in off the bay there, and the ice, I guess, came up past, up to the edge about maybe 3 feet of the roller coaster. But it tore down one of the houses right there, which was originally the bathhouse.
Well, do you remember then when the big dock was wiped out? Was that not wiped out by an ice storm?
Partly. Ice storm plus age. But I was here when they had the walkway out there with the wooden walk, out to the water.
See, I don't remember that. So that must have been gone at least before 1950 or 50.
And the roller coaster was kind of comparable to me around the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee. They had an auditorium in Nashville. They used to say that Bob Hope used to make alliances. They wanted to keep this building together with scotch tape and Band-Aids, you know. And they did the same with the roller coaster.
With the roller coaster, you could go along it and shake.
The biggest thrill on that was trying to get around and get off before it fell apart.
Our history, we played ball as kids.
Yeah, Well, I spent most of my... It was funny. I was just talking to some people the other day, and they talked about, like, the North, North Michigan. And I guess I must have spent a good 30, 35 years up here, and the farthest North Avenue was maybe Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to Ivy's Chicken House for dinner. I don't remember that place.
Oh, that's still
there.
That's still
going strong. And that's my northern Michigan. I mean, I never been up further north than that. I went to Duluth, Minnesota one time, and I took the scenic route through Bay City, and there, that's the first time I'd ever been up north in northern Michigan, over the bridge.
Yeah.
Well, did the casino always a casino? Was that why that building was built?
When I first started coming up here, a fellow named Earl Bammel, who's now deceased.
I knew Earl real well. He lived right back.
Yes. And Earl was in Detroit. We worked at a place called the Clarktown Tavern. And I guess they had had a little entertainment up here, spasmodically, I guess you call it, every once in a while. And he asked me if I'd like to come up one summer and just, you know, spend the summer up here. We wake up. So at that time, I mean, like when I lived in Detroit at that time, I was getting $35 a week, and I had a suite of rooms at the Detroit Hotel, and I was eating good, I was buying good clothes, and I could still stay $5 a week, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess at the time we started, the casino was 15 cents admission charge, and they had like a 10 cent beer. And when we started, there wasn't too much entertainment up here. I guess at that time it was, like you say, the cycle has really changed. They had a ballet over in the skating rink that came up from Detroit. And I guess it was, I wouldn't know if you want to use the word straight-laced or what. But conservative, let's use it that way. That they insisted that the girls that danced were covered from their ankles to their wrists, mm-hmm. completely clothed with the ballet. And the entertainers, I think, at that time was a big fat gal named Millie Obinar, big fat gal singer. This was before Mary Beth Ayers' time. And that was our first, Millie and I. And we used to bring maybe a dance team up, and we'd always tell them, regardless of how the audience receives you, please have fun, you know, mm-hmm. amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
And don't do anything that would offend anybody, don't heckle anybody, don't argue with anybody. Just do your shows and stay away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just permeated this mushroom ball, snowball into a terrific spot.
Yeah.
Then when you were out there and having the Sunday afternoon shows, I think you had some Saturday nights or Friday nights?
We were weekends. We didn't start yet. And then we actually started Sunday afternoon shows after we got rolling pretty good, for like a Kiddies matinee free show.
Yeah, when do you first recall a Kiddies matinee? I remember going to them, but I can't remember.
I don't know how long ago that was. It's got to be in the 50s anyway.
Early 50s, yeah. I know my sister, I can remember, she's got a big photograph, 8x10, Andy Munch.
Yeah, he used to live on the corner next to the Bayview Bar. And he had a couple of kids that were very great skaters, ice skaters.
Drew Munch, yeah.
Right.
Well, was he the photographer?
He came in. I guess they had a little booth. They put up a booth, and they used to take pictures in the club at that time.
My sister, I can remember, she used to be a ballet acrobatic type.
Yeah.
And she performed up there one time.
Yeah. We used to have the kiddie matinees, and we had to get the kids up to perform on Sundays. And some of the acts that worked during the week that were comparable to acceptable to afternoon shows, you know, like musical acts or dancing acts or singers, that they used to do a little bit of like a mini version of their act on Sunday afternoons because it was a free show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there used to be a color guy out there. I can't.
Bobby Johnson. Sometimes he made more money than we did.
Yeah.
He used to sweep the floor during the intermissions, and they'd throw money on the stage to him.
Yeah.
And that was his livelihood. He looked forward to that every summer, and he worked there all summer long, you know. And he'd sweep the floors and pick up the money. I used to help him pick it up once in a while, you know, for fun. That was, I guess, that's years of my life.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what kept me out of the big time. I'd go work up till decoration day, and I'd say, well, I don't care where I am, I'll see you in September, and I'd just come up here and spend the summer up here.
Yeah, I know, that's, Mrs. Hatchell said that much of this area, that you came here and had your children born
here? Both kids were born here at Mercy Hospital. Yeah, they were both born here. In fact, my one daughter was born 5 minutes before 12 on Father's Day, Linda, and Dr. Dardis called me from the hospital. He says he used to wait me out. They'd been there all afternoon, and he called me. They made an announcement over the PA, said, hey, Harry, your daughter was just born. It was like 5 minutes before 12. We were in the second show at the time. And Dr. Knobloch.
I remember back about the beach. I remember a heyday of people there. Sunday afternoon, about, I would say 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it'd be thick. Used to sell balloons for a lady over there that had balloons.
Yeah, yeah.
The ring toss.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I can't remember her name. And then I worked in a French fry stand.
Yeah. Now, what was the name of the guy used to run a French fry? Fritz Rear.
Fritz
Rear.
That was the last guy I can remember running.
Yeah, yeah.
And Larry Gillis used to run that for a while. We'd run French fries in the casino there and make them in about midnight. We'd just, you know, have them all full. But I can remember a heyday of people out there, and then slowly but surely after that, a lot of people will say, you know, there was a race problem. And people stopped coming.
Well, we never had, we never had a race problem. I don't know what, we never did tell, you know, we never said, don't come in, you can come in. Mm-hmm. But we never had a big problem with that. I mean, I guess it was a scare like every place else in the United States right now. But then we never had that problem. The problem I think you're talking about is that for the park itself, a lot of people came over, like from outside, came in and took over, like, and they started working around the park and scared people, some of the people away.
It's funny that it went downhill like that, you know, especially for the few entertainment places that people have in this area now. Well, there's more people, and you think there'd really be a demand for something like that.
Well, the cycle of nightclubs, as far as supper clubs are concerned now, there's actually the United States, the whole country, the cycle changed. They've gone to television came in,
yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. And that's one, we mm-hmm. got to blame it on something, so we're blaming it on television. Mm-hmm. But you say like there's so many people, but no place, and there weren't any places to go. When there were a lot of spots to go, I mean, you can call them good, bad, or indifferent. There was the Green Mill in Saginaw, there was the Moonlight Gardens in Saginaw, Art Narlock had his bar going. Whether you liked it or not, there was the, wait a minute now, what's the name? Top Hat. It was kind of a strip place to
yeah,
go.
Yeah,
but there were a lot of places, who else? Some other bars that had a little bit of entertainment. But there was some place to go except one place.
Yeah.
Just to make it very, very, very now or today. Last night we were. I went to the Elmwood. George Kirby's there, who I think is one of the most complete entertainers in show business today. Fantastic show. No business. There was 15 people for the second show.
Wow.
Last year alone, 23 of the top spots in the United States that were using named talent closed. Because they don't go out anymore like that.
Yeah.
They just the people that have got enough money to entertain are entertaining in their homes. And the middle class people, it's just too much. I guess the fluctuation of money, the high cost of living. You could go to the beach, and if you wanted to have a couple of beers and see the show, you could go home for $1.50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can't even get an estimate for $1.50 now. I went downtown to Detroit Friday. I went into the Penobscot building to pick up some papers. I parked my car. I wasn't gone a good 30 minutes, $1.10, you know. So I think that had a lot to do with it. You could sit home with a box of popcorn and your own beer in your icebox and see fantastic entertainment, like a $1 million show on television was free. And it sort of dwindled off. And there aren't any big names today that you can guarantee, like they're gonna pack a club. There are a few, like, I guess you could use a kind of a funny term, like freak act. What I mean by the word freak is they wanna see you. They come to see you, they don't know what you saw you on. Television exposure right now is the biggest monster there is. And sometimes it has an adverse way of looking at it. They don't like you on television, so they don't come to see in the club. And in the club, a lot of acts that work on television don't do their act in the club. They do a different type of an act, and what they see on television is not what they see in the club. Now, like George Kirby, he's got a show on television now. It's not that good a show. You don't really see George Kirby as George Kirby himself.
And I think a lot of shows are like that. What you see in an audience, and you can't get away with
live
on television.
Right. I'm gonna say live audiences is no comparison to television. You know, there's some kind of a feeling there. You get a togetherness feeling, or you can feel the warmth of the cold part of an audience. You can feel a reaction that you don't feel when you work in television. Like you see most of the shows on television now, even the
Rickles
most
or somebody
they like are that. They have canned laughter.
Yeah,
they're doing the show to no audience. And they inject the laughter after the show is done. Well, you can't pace yourself or know how the reaction is going to be. Like sometimes you may not expect a laugh. You get a laugh, you have to wait. But on television, you don't know whether you're going to get a laugh or not. So you just go through the motions and have to have your own thing going in yourself. You know.
I remember when we were at the club, I'd get up and go to the bathroom, and someone would shine a light on me, and you'd make a crack. You know,
it was fun. Yeah.
Fun. You felt like crawling
and all. And they talk about like the type of entertainment. It's different now. We had fun. I could say the building was like nothing, a schlock place. I mean, it was a barn, the casino.
Yeah.
But what decorated it and what made the place was the people that came in.
Yeah.
The best people in the world were there, the nicest people. And it was like a family reunion. Instead of having a party in their living room, they went to the beach. I could walk out on a Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, And I didn't say, shut my eyes and walk out, and I can tell you who's going to be sitting at this table. And every week they were there. They came in. You know, we used to do all those things, skits night on Tuesday nights, and we had the auction, crazy auction on Thursday nights. And it was just fun. And nobody, you never had any problems. I don't think we had, I could say I must have worked 40 years at the beach every summer. And I don't think we had one, actually what we could call any kind of a fight, use the word fight, the whole time we were there, which is phenomenal, you know. Nobody picked on anybody else, and everybody come in knew everybody, you know.
Do you think there's a difference of people? I mean, the
character
of people,
definitely.
Because of what, television or the media?
No, it's just a change. I think people have lost the feeling. I'm kind of getting corny, but the feeling of love or trust. I guess maybe it's trust more than love.
Yeah, and you don't hear that laughter anymore like you used to.
You're
hear
scared.
Yeah.
People are scared to laugh.
They just don't laugh anymore.
No, now they got Polish jokes, you know.
Yeah.
You got black jokes. But before, when you say something about a black person or a Polish guy or a Jew, or you could even use the word Dago without getting hurt, you know. But now you're scared, you know, you're even scared to talk to your brother.
Yeah.
You know, you say hello, and the guy said, "What do you mean by that?"
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of the feeling that you get. But I've been in this business all my life, and I'll tell you one thing, it's a very small world. I've been all over the world. I've worked every place, and I always invariably run into somebody that used to live in the Saginaw Valley. See?
Well, if they've heard of you.
Yeah, see, and
especially if they're beach people,
they're
going to look you up.
And they say, yeah, hey, and I just ran into a fellow named Ed Yarbrough, who used to live up here. We did a cruise. I just did a cruise. I came off for a cruise. I was on the MS Bohemian. We did a going to some islands, and Christmas and New Year's, this past Christmas. He's living in Denver now. And they were on the boat. See? And he says, hey, you know, God, I haven't seen him in like, you know, 25, 30 years like that. And I said, hey, you sure look good. And I said, take this before you die. You know, you sure look good. But every place, Duluth, we worked Duluth, and I mean, some people that used to live in Midland come up. And it's funny because, and what I was getting to the point is, when they see me, they come up and they throw their arms around you, and you know, and I am going with a girl singer now that I've been going with about 3 years. And it's a standard gag with her. If a guy will come up to me and throw his arms around me and kiss me on the cheek, she'll say, Bay City. I say, right. And it's a, like, and, you know, people nowadays, they say, hello, how are you, and good, and they keep on walking. They don't really want to know. It's just a matter of speech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that what I have accumulated in this area with the people is that it's a true friendship thing. Like you guys coming and asking me about this here, you know. You don't get that anyplace else. I don't get that anyplace in the United States other than what I get up here.
Well, to me, entertainment, you think of entertainment in Bay City, you got to think of Jerry Jerk.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of a legend in this area.
And you are, and it's you know, you can't fathom anything else but that one idea. And for me, it's, of course, it encompasses our short lifespan of understanding what entertainment is. And
it's different. We don't have the camaraderie that we had before.
No.
See? Now, I guess excluding names, we had the best talent that was available in the United States at the beach during the summer season. Every act, because we used to tell them, come on up, you have a lot of fun, don't get a lot, that old gag about you don't make a lot of money, but you have a lot of fun. But they did have fun. And people that came in, like on Tuesday night, by Thursday, the people that were on the show were their friends already. You could walk down on the corner, I'm more familiar with Bay City because I spent most of my time in Bay City. I mean, it was Saginaw, Midland. I knew people, but I didn't have, say where there were 26,000 people in Bay City at the time. We had 26,000, a family of 26,000. That's the way I felt. We'd go on the corner of Center Washington, and everybody walked by, they'd call you by your first name, and you knew them by their first name, which is nothing. I don't think there's anything in the United States or anywhere in the world that people were that close, closely knitted, like with the entertainment or anything. Guy walk on the corner from one store to the next. There was a nice competitive feeling, not a vicious competitive, which there is now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a rat race now.
And you see a lot of it on television, but to really get out, I was stationed, I just got out of the Air Force,
yeah.
I was stationed in California in
yeah.
the Mojave Desert, the Georgia Air Force Base. We used to drive up to Las Vegas, and I'd take in the shows, saw Bobby Darin, Don Rickles all the time. There's nothing like being there and having the show live.
Right.
You can't put it on television and get the same...
You don't get the same feedback.
Oh, it just cracked me up. Yeah. I watch Rickles on TV, and it's dry to me.
Nothing.
Somehow.
Well, he can't... On television, he has a certain format that he has to follow. And when you're working live, if you say hello and you want to say goodbye and then come back and say hello again, you can do it. Mm-hmm. But on television, once you want to say hello, you got to do what you got to do and get off. Like sometimes on any of the talk shows, which is something almost close to what we're doing. But they have just so much time allowed. I'm like, you say, do a 3-minute stint. Well, when I used to work at the beach, I'd go maybe 20, 30 minutes saying hello before we ever did any part of the show, talking to the people, asking what's going on, which I think kind of made it. We're talking about now who's the biggest stars in show business today. I'd say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and bowling, because they're the people that are going to the clubs now. Banquet parties. That's what's making the clubs now. I mean, if it wasn't for them, I don't know if you've been like Vegas now. It's not like it used to be. I mean, you could go to Vegas, and they give you a dinner just to go to the club. No. Now they charge you admission. They charge you regular price for dinner because there aren't that many people doing that anymore. Or you go to Detroit to a club today, and you got to figure $40. To go in and have dinner and see a show.
You're playing out there, you were, or I don't know what contract you have, out in Midland or at the Tri-City Airport?
I worked there, yeah. 2 days, yeah.
Do they have the same, do you have the same type of show that you had like out at the beach, or is it?
Well, I work more by myself, you know. I haven't, not now, no. I haven't been working many clubs, like per se, supper clubs. I've been doing mostly club dates, and I don't know if you know what I mean by club date. It's one show. Industrial parties. Today, the big thing today in show business is credit unions and state fair. There's an enormous amount of credit unions all over the United States, and they have an annual party and they have a show. Or General Motors will have a show. I have a big. They only have one show, and shopping centers all over the United States where they have enclosed malls are using big type shows. But when I work by myself, I do more. I guess you'd call it more of a concert type of thing. And I have more of a set routine. I do maybe like an hour, and then that's it, you know. And I do the same thing over again. At the beach, we never knew what we were going to do till we got out. I mean, the audience made my shows for me. They called out what they wanted me to do, which was a blessing in disguise, you know.
Well, I remember the routines you used to have. One with a hat, and you'd turn around again. I'm trying to think of the people on television that got that same idea today. And
well, it's funny. It's a weird, eerie feeling. Because we were doing things then, you know, that we never dreamt of. And then all of a sudden, there's only, actually in show business, like you take jokes, there's only 5 jokes in the whole show business. You just go from that joke to something else. And we did a lot of things up here that, I mean, like now they're doing, but they're doing in a different way. Now, comics today, per se, are stand-up comics. They stand out, they'll do 15 minutes of talk, and they walk off. They don't even show a bead of perspiration. Nobody jumps up and down. They don't use hats anymore. They don't have fun. They don't, you know, like a Jerry Lewis type of thing. There aren't any comics there. I don't think you could mention one guy.
But I remember you used to turn off the comic part and turn on the master of ceremonies and introduce.
Don't do it. It's no anymore. There are no, what you said, master ceremonies anymore. If you've been to a lot of clubs, they have a guy on the bandstand or a guy backstage and say, now, here he is.
Right.
Mr. Goujon, here he is. Harry Jack, and you walk out, you take a bow and you walk off. They go into the music, and it's just a cold. Matter of fact, this thing, which is missing. They don't have any more nice maitre d's at a door. I mean, when you go to, I don't know how everybody has a certain amount of vanity. And you go to a place that they know you. Like, even when you go out to a restaurant today, if you know the head waiter that when you walk in, it's, how do you do, Mr. Jackie? Yes, you want your same table? Sure. Well, you go back there because you got just a little feeling. It makes you feel good that somebody recognizes you. I don't care who you are, man. You could be working, you know, on a production line someplace or
sweeping.
Right. There's no more personal contact like that. And that's what we had out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the time. I didn't know their names, but I remember, I mean, like I could tell you faces, boy, you know, like from way back. God.
Dick Jessup used to play out there.
Well, Dick was in the later stages, see. Earl Bammer was first. Then there was a fellow named Paul Lavoie. I don't know if you remember him or not. He used to be the musical director of WJR.
Early 50s?
Yes, he used to live out there over near State Park Road in that area. He had built himself a log cabin. He used to come up here in the summertime, and he'd work up here in the summer because you could get back and forth, you know. Then after that is when Dick came in.
Yeah. He used to be another Doc Severinsen, so to speak.
Right, still. Dick is still He's a fantastic trumpet player. He sings great still. He looks great now. But he just didn't, I guess he just, he and I have been over 15 years now trying to find something that we could do up here to stay together, you know. Yeah. But we haven't come across it, you know.
Well, when you played, do you have a band backing you up now? Or?
Yes. And if you want to ask me about that, the musical caliber of musicians today is at the lowest ebb. If you can't play in the key of E or sing in the key of E, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
See, they don't learn to play. They pick up, like, you know, with a guitar. You go someplace, you got three guitars and a drummer, and I ask them to play Saints Go Marching In. They never heard Saints Go Marching In, you know.
Yeah.
Or Hello Dolly that I do now. And, man, how's it go? You know, hum it to me. It's changed. And Dick Reed's good. I mean, well, we used to have bull sessions every week. You know, like once a week we'd get together and we'd do things that I don't remember. They'd write them down. And he says, you did this and this. That's how most of my routine started. I'd pick out a song and do it straight. And as we went along, we'd think of some things would happen in between while we... And at the end of the week, we'd write it down. And we'd put it in like a rehearsed ad-lib, which a lot of people don't understand. When you hear a guy do something on television like he just thought of it, he's had that on his mind for a long time whenever he wanted to use it. Did I tell you, we used to work up things and this... It was like a six-people act with me, five guys, the band, and me, and we'd do things. Remember, we used to do the bits and things.
Yeah,
and that was the beauty of what we were doing compared to what they're doing today.
In fact, I don't know whether you were ad-libbing or what, but there'd be a performer out there, and he'd be in the middle of the song, and all of a sudden, I want you to come, and away you go. And
that would be that was an ad-lib, and by Saturday, Friday, or Saturday, we had injected it into the show like Wednesday, and then from the rest of the week was fun. We had no inhibitions, you know, because we didn't care. I mean, as long as it was clean and we had fun. We never tried to do anything to insult anybody, you know.
Well, the bathroom routine.
Well, that, yeah, but yeah, compared to today, I mean, the bathroom routine, you could do that at the PTA meeting.
Yeah, those were good days, though.
It's true that it's hard to construct an atmosphere, and even with that old building, you know, you never find a building like that anymore.
No.
They just don't construct things like that
anymore. It's too bad they couldn't have made a shrine or went on a beach. Yeah. Leave the buildings up like the Penny Arcade,
right.
You know, the old roller coaster. They should have put that up where they could leave it up sitting there, you know.
Yeah, it's a trailer park.
It's a trailer park now, yeah.
I've been thinking someday what I would like to do if I could collect enough pictures. I don't know if my two brothers and I have a boat shop over here.
I know that now.
We manufacture boats and things like that. But anyway, I have the resources to make a model, and I was almost thinking that I would like to, from my memory, of 55, make a model of the way the beach.
Well, I'll tell you something. I bet you I would be willing to say, because people have come up to me with pictures that they took 40 years ago.
Yeah.
See. I ran into a girl that used to be a waitress at the Cork Town Tavern and also worked up here during the summertime. I worked at a place called the Royal Ascot about 4 weeks ago. She came with pictures that she took up here because she said I was going to be there and she brought them. Now, I'd be willing to venture that if you put an ad or had a go down to this guy, I'm going to apologize. Are we on tape? Are we running this thing now?
I think it's running now. It's just
if you call, I kind of think of this guy's name. I can't think of his name because his wife and he are very good friends of mine, and he works at the Bay City Times. If you went down there to him and explained to him what you're doing, that he could put something in the paper, and I would be willing, you could get 1,000 pictures.
Right.
They got pictures of me when I did a radio show at WSGW for Bob Phillips, Jack Parker, who's in Saginaw now, those two. They got pictures stacked over here. In fact, they're still using a picture of me and the ad here that was taken 30 years ago, you know. They got a file on me, and I imagine they would have some pictures yet if they... somewhere in their files of the big ice floe that they had up there. And that thing was like 30 feet high, the ice coming out.
I can remember the ice out there years ago right in front of our house, but I can't remember.
It came right up to the roller coaster and quit. It's the most phenomenal thing in the world. When I first came up here, I had a little cottage right by the roller coaster, and I was the first guy that had an indoor shower. But how I did it, I was out by the kitchen window. I built a little stall out there, and I had one of those portable hoses that you buy and stuck it on the kitchen sink and stuck it out the window, and that's how we took our showers. That's how we started.
I don't know whether it was you would know or...